This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett. Heard every Sunday night from 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett. Heard every Sunday night from 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
Canada, The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett from Zoomer Radio, AM 740.
And welcome to the Audio Imaginarium. My name is Richard Serrett, and this is a radio program that aims for your mind and your heart, but sometimes, occasionally, hits you in the stomach. Sorry about that. My dear friend and colleague George Ginescu, who just exited the building, he's been in radio for nearly 65 years. He's the host of Big Band Sunday Nights, which precedes this program here on our flagship station, AM 740, Zoomer Radio in Toronto. So after 65 years, you'd think he'd know a thing or two. But I love George, don't get me wrong. But several times on the air, George has referred to me, I can barely say this with a straight face, he's referred to me as a modern-day prophet. Now, George's heart is in the right place, but in truth, it's, as I say, it's hard for me to keep a straight face when he says it, and deep down, I suspect it's hard for him to keep a straight face when he says it. It goes without question that I am about as far removed from being a prophet as any man could be. But one thing I will admit to, I am, like many of you listening, a seeker of the truth. I certainly don't claim that I've found it, but I am looking. And for all of you listening tonight who are looking and searching, this show is dedicated to you, searching for the truth. In a world full of deceit, that's not for the squeamish or the faint of heart, to be sure. As C.S. Lewis said, if you look for the truth, you may find comfort in the end. If you look for comfort, you will not get either comfort or truth, only soft soap and wishful thinking to begin. And in the end, despair. So let's all search for a little truth, and may we all find some comfort in the end. No, I am no prophet. Now, Isaiah, there was a prophet, the prince of prophets. The author of the book in the Old Testament, Isaiah, also called the Book of Salvation. Now, Isaiah is the first book in the Old Testament, is the first book containing the writings of the prophets of the Bible. And Isaiah was a masterful writer. He had an immense vocabulary. He was also very poetic. And all of these attributes have earned Isaiah the title the Shakespeare of the Bible. He was educated. He was distinguished and privileged. Yet he remained a deeply spiritual man. He was committed to obedience over the long haul of his 55 to 60-year ministry as a prophet of God. He was a true patriot. He loved his country and his people. And strong tradition suggests he died a martyr's death under the reign of King Manasseh by being placed within the hollow of a tree trunk and sawed in two. Isaiah's calling as a prophet was primarily to the nation of Judah, the southern kingdom, and to Jerusalem, urging the people to repent from their sins and return to God. He also foretold the coming of the Messiah and the salvation of the Lord. Many of his prophecies predicted events that occurred in Isaiah's near future, yet at the same time they foretold the events of the distant future, such as the coming of the Messiah, and even some events still to come in the last days. So in summary, the message of Isaiah is that salvation comes from God, not man. God alone is Savior, ruler, and King. Well, tonight, We're going to talk about the book of Isaiah. More precisely, we'll be talking about one relatively obscure verse of Scripture that may hold the secret to the pain and suffering America has been experiencing in increasing doses since 9/11. Are America's key leaders unknowingly fulfilling a prophetic destiny of national judgment by uttering words from the Bible they don't comprehend? Is the United States following in the footsteps of ancient Israel, with a spirit of defiance against God leading to increasingly severe judgments? And is this judgment revealed in an ancient mystery that foretells current events down to the exact dates? This is the subject of a new documentary entitled The Isaiah 9:10 Judgment, which is based on the research of a Messianic Jew, Pastor Jonathan Kahn. Joining me now is the producer of The Isaiah 9:10 Judgment, Joseph Farah. He's the founder, editor, chief executive officer of WorldNetDaily.com, the world's leading independent news site. In addition, he hosts a nationally syndicated talk radio show. He's written for such publications as the Wall Street Journal, Jerusalem Post, the LA Times, Boston Globe. On and on it goes. I could spend an hour reading his bio, but let's just get Joseph in here and get right down to business. Joseph, welcome to The Conspiracy Show, and thank you very much for joining me tonight.
No, it's great to be with you, Richard, and thank you for that nice introduction. You made it easy to talk about a very, somewhat complicated subject by your setup there.
Well, congratulations. I watched the documentary this afternoon, and we'll tell people how they can get a hold of The Isaiah 9:10 Judgment. First of all, just give us some insights into Pastor or Rabbi Jonathan Kahn. Who is this man?
That's a great place to start, because it's kind of funny how I discovered Jonathan before The Harbinger came out. Of course, after The Harbinger came out and, went to became a New York Times bestseller on its very first week and has been there, I believe, ever since. We're going on 2 years now. And it has certainly been the biggest selling, Christian book, faith book, of the last 2 years. But it was in the fall of 2011, before anybody, ever heard of Jonathan Kahn or The Harbinger, that I got kind of an insight into his teaching. He had appeared on a television show that I had never seen or heard of, and I never watched. But somebody sent me a link to the episode that he appeared on for about 15 or 20 minutes. And you can imagine, Richard, that I get a lot of emails, thousands a day. And something made me put this one aside. I didn't just hit the delete key, which is the most tempting thing to do in my business. I put it aside, and later in the week, on the weekend, something made me click on this thing. And to this day, I just have to tell you, I think it was a God thing. I clicked on this show I'd never heard of, watched this guy I'd never heard of, and I heard him talk about The Harbinger, and within a few minutes, I was so hooked. I literally believed that he had hit on something so key to the future of America, the future of the world, where we are right now spiritually, what we're doing wrong, and how we can save ourselves. And I was so excited by this short synopsis that he gave on the show that on Monday morning I found myself dialing Jonathan's phone number and breathlessly talking to him about of course the first question out of my mind, because I'm more known for publishing books than doing movies, was, hey, have you got a book contract? And sure enough, he had. And the book was scheduled to come out in just a few months on the first week of January of 2012. And so my second question was, have you got a movie deal? And that's where we got started. And literally within, a couple of weeks, we had secured a licensing deal for the story and were in production. Because it was very important to me. I knew The Harbinger was going to be a big success. There was no question in my mind that this story, this teaching, was going to resonate with people from coast to coast and around the world, which it did. And I wanted to get the movie out as quickly as possible on the heels of that book release. And we were fortunate enough to be able to do that within 3 months. It was out in March of 2012. And The Harbinger had already established tremendous momentum, both in terms of sales and in terms of, you know, just reaching people by the millions. And so the Isaiah 9:10 Judgment, the movie, rode that wave and became the best-selling faith movie of 2012 and 2013. And it, too, is having an impact. And the stories, you know, when I read The Harbinger, I read it with great interest, but I wanted to, you know, what was lacking for me, I was afraid people would say, gee, this is an interesting story, and miss that it was all true, that these things actually happened. And what I wanted to do was to make a documentary so people could actually see them happening, because without seeing, some people won't believe. And I had to see, you know, these things happening before my eyes to believe it.
It is quite remarkable. And, you know, it's right there in front of you, and you almost begin to question, you know, is this real? Is this happening? Is this unfolding the way, you know, it has been foretold? Let's begin. Let me just remind listeners, Joseph Farah, the founder editor of WorldNetDaily.com, is with us, and he is the producer of a new documentary, The Isaiah 9:10 Judgment. Now, let's begin. What does Isaiah 9:10 actually say, Joseph?
Well, you know, I had read those words, I'm sure, hundreds of times. You know, I'm a pretty prolific Bible reader, and I had not really understood the significance of these words until Jonathan's teaching, but it's very simple. It says, the bricks are fallen down, but we will build with hewn stones. The sycamores are cut down, but we will change them into cedars. What it's about, the historical context here, is that the northern kingdom of Israel, you know, remember the Jewish states divided into two separate entities. Israel, ancient Israel, was falling into decay and decadence faster than the nation of Judah, where Jerusalem was. God was going to judge Israel. And when he judges nations, especially, you know, a nation he founded and he gave the scriptures to, is going to be judged harshly, but they're given a chance to repent many times. And God uses other nations to judge Israel and to judge other nations as well. Sometimes they're very evil nations. And he used the evil nation of Assyria to launch what was a limited strike, if you will, into the heart of the nation of Israel. And, of course, what God wanted to happen was that Israel would see this attack and repent of its evil ways, to turn to paganism and so forth, and turn back to him. But instead of doing that, what they said was, and this is what Isaiah 9:10 is reflecting, is, we don't need God. We're going to rebuild better and bigger and stronger in our own strength. Okay, we don't need God. God was not part of the equation for them. And ultimately, they were judged and destroyed and dispersed throughout the nations as a result of that.
All right, I'm going to jump in here, Joseph. We'll take a time out, come back on the other side. Joseph Farah, founder, editor of WorldNetDaily.com, the producer of the Isaiah 9:10 Judgment. Is there an ancient mystery that foretells America's future? Back with more in a moment. Stay with us. Welcome back. Isaiah 9:10. The bricks have fallen, but we will rebuild with dressed stones. The sycamores have been cut down, but we will put cedars in their place. It's a rather obscure passage from the Old Testament, from the Prince of Prophets, Isaiah. Is there a connection between that ancient prophecy and what's happening in the United States, certainly since 9/11, the events of 9/11? Joseph Farah is with us, the producer of the Isaiah 9:10 Judgment, the CEO and founder of WorldNetDaily.com. So let's talk about that passage. The bricks have fallen, but we will rebuild with dressed stones. The sycamores have been cut down, but we will put cedars in their place.
Yeah. What could that possibly have to do with the United States?
Exactly.
Well, it didn't take me long to figure this out. All I had to see was the day after 9/11, and think of what 9/11 is. 9/11 is a limited strike on the United States of America. Terrible blow, but you know it was not the end of the United States of America by any stretch of the imagination.
Initial breach of security.
Exactly, and I believe it now. Now I believe this. I didn't know it back then when it happened, but I do believe that it was a warning from God, that He wanted us to turn back to Him and His ways. And what happened the day after 9/11, a speech was given nationally, publicly televised. It was given by the Senate Majority Leader at that time, Tom Daschle, who was chosen, I guess, by President Bush to give this important speech to the nation. And Tom Daschle, finishes his speech by saying, you know, at times like this, we can take comfort, and I'm paraphrasing now, from the words in Isaiah, and he reads Isaiah 9:10, thinking that these are words of comfort, apparently, that we're going to rebuild, you know, bigger and better, we're going to come back stronger. That's essentially what that verse is telling us. And I was a newsman on 9/11. I'm sure I saw that speech when it happened. If I did, I didn't even catch the significance of the misuse of that quote, because I mean, here you have a leader, a very significant leader, giving a speech to a joint session of Congress on national television, and it's the same response, word for word, that the leaders of ancient Israel gave, as noted in Isaiah 9:10, when they chose to ignore God, ignore the need for repentance, ignore the fact that God was calling them back, ignore the need for humility and reflection. And he gave essentially the same arrogant and defiant response without knowing, I don't think he knew what he was doing, that the children of Israel gave to rebuke God's warning and rely instead on their own resourcefulness, their own strength. And when they literally pronounced judgment on themselves and their nation. And that's what Tom Daschle did the day after 9/11. Now, that got my attention.
And we should, and, just Joseph, for those just joining us, we should point out that the parallel here is that not Judah, but the kingdom to the north, Sumeria, mm-hmm. Had been attacked, invaded by the Assyrians. We're talking about, 8th century B.C.?
Right.
And the Assyrians, I mean, their warriors were pretty, I guess you could call them terrorists. I mean, they would attack civilians.
They invented terrorism. There's no question about that. They
ruthless,
you know,
ruthless.
They didn't just destroy their enemy. They humiliated them. They beheaded them. They were tortured them. They were ruthless. And they are the precursors of the kinds of terrorists that America is facing today. In fact, you know, they come from the same part of the world. They spoke a language that is the closest language, ancient language, to modern Arabic that there is today. And then you turn around and you look at the people who attacked us. They come from the same place. They speak a language that's very similar. And they are terrorists.
Okay, so the 9/11 attacks, the day after, I believe it was, Tom Daschle in the Senate utters this passage from Isaiah 9:10, not realizing that it was a defiance of God. It was the Sumerians being incredibly arrogant, snubbing their nose at God, saying, "We don't need you. We will rebuild all on our own without God." But the parallels don't end there.
Oh, no, not by a long shot. This is just the beginning. In fact, this becomes a familiar refrain by national leaders that they're still taking place today. I mean, we can barely chronicle them, but Another good example is on the fourth anniversary of 9/11, another speech is given in Washington by another national leader by the name of John Edwards, who was a U.S. senator at the time. I'm sorry, it was the third anniversary of 9/11, and he was the vice presidential candidate for John Kerry at the time. So it was a very significant speech. Now, he builds his whole speech around Isaiah 9:10. Literally, everything he says, let's go, you know, on this day, let's go to see what the Lord has to say to us. And he quotes Isaiah 9:10, and he builds his whole speech is framed around that. And it goes from there. Another significant one is when Barack Obama is sworn in as president and gives in his inaugural address, gives a speech that is entirely reminiscent of Isaiah 9:10. The key to the whole speech is we will rebuild, we will come back stronger, and it's almost like, you know, a what the commentaries say about Isaiah 9:10, it's word for word what Obama says in his inaugural address.
And as you point out in the documentary, there's a clip from Donald Trump. I remember this very distinctly after 9/11, and the mayor Rudolph Giuliani in New York, they were all saying the same thing: "We're going to build this tower. We're going to build it one floor higher than the last time. We're going to control the New York skyline, not the terrorists. You know, we are the masters of our own destiny." So again, yes, this hubris, this no repentance, no introspection. You know, why did this happen? Is there something that we're doing? None of that. But you mentioned the utterance by John Edwards, the vice presidential candidate at the time. But let's go back and we get back into now Rabbi Kahn's book, The Harbinger, mm-hmm. and some of the earlier harbingers. For example, the harbinger that, I mean, the first words in Isaiah 9:10, the bricks have fallen. Let's walk us through the first several harbingers here, starting with the bricks.
Very, very good idea. The bricks have fallen. Well, you know, on 9/11, bricks fell. Literal bricks fell. And, as Daschle was speaking those words, keep in mind, the dust had not cleared yet from ground zero in New York City. And we really didn't even understand the devastation of what was going on at that point. But yet, he's using those words. And, you know, when they were cleaning up the mess, there were actual bricks from the destruction there. What is the response? Well, we're going to build with hewn stone. Well, hewn stone, the actual Hebrew word there is gazit, a gazit stone. And a gazit stone is something that's carved out of a granite, big blocks. In other words, you know, we're not going to build with bricks again. We're going to build with sizable stones. And that's exactly what the intent was, you know, of the new World Trade Center that has been built now and is complete in New York City now. But back a few years ago, before the construction even began, what they did, the leaders of the city, the business leaders and so forth, they got together and they dedicated to building bigger and stronger by bringing in a gigantic, I don't know how much it weighed, tons, a piece of granite carved out of the Adirondack Mountains in New York, and, you know, brought it to the site of destruction and placed it there. And it was inscribed with a message about how, you know, this is an illustration of how we're going to rebuild bigger and stronger. And speeches were given by the mayor, governor of New Jersey, bunch of people. The theme of that dedication was the same theme we're talking about. We will rebuild, we will build stronger and better and higher. And that, again, that message I can give you countless dozens and dozens of examples that have happened since the movie came out, since the book came out, of leaders who have been making this same pronouncement over and over again. In fact, the new World Trade Center is at the very top of that World Trade Center building now, is a brick that Barack Obama actually inscribed with these words: "We will rebuild bigger and stronger." And that's at the very, you know, and the pledge was to build higher. That's exactly what we did.
Joseph Ferra is with us, the founder, CEO of WorldNetDaily.com and the producer of the Isaiah 9:10 Judgment. I really want to talk about the sycamore, because prior to watching this documentary, I had no idea how important a symbol of the sycamore tree is to the very foundation of the United States, and particularly the heart of the economic center in New York City, the sycamore
tree.
That's
right, and it's also very significant to the nation of Israel, because the sycamore is also a fig tree. And, of course, you know, we identify Israel with really two trees you identify Israel with. One is the olive tree.
Yes.
But more importantly is the fig tree. You find it all throughout the Bible, references to it. And so what happened in the northern kingdom of Israel is when this attack came, the Assyrians destroyed the little tree. Sycamores is, you know, not a very big tree, not a very significant tree. They cut them down. And so,
kind of a scorched earth policy.
Right. And so the leaders of Israel say, well, big deal. We lost these sycamore trees. We'll rebuild. We'll plant cedars in their place. And actually, the word there for cedars is more appropriately a panacea tree, which is a very large tree, not necessarily a cedar, but it's an evergreen tree, big.
Yeah. From the conifer family, yeah.
That's right. And so in New York City, you think, well, what could the significance of a sycamore be? Would there even be a sycamore involved in the attack on 9/11? And sure enough, if you go to the site of Ground Zero today, there is memorialized in bronze a sycamore tree that was uprooted when these buildings came toppling down. In fact, many of your listeners would probably remember hearing about a church. They called it the Miracle Church because it was the only building on Ground Zero, literally, that was not toppled and destroyed. And they say that this sycamore tree that shielded the brunt of the force from, you know, the tremendous force that of these buildings toppling. And you can remember the video we all saw of what looked like, you know, a hurricane of dust and debris flying in every direction. That's what felled this sycamore tree, which has, as I said, been memorialized in bronze there. And you can visit it, as I have done with Jonathan. And it's a stunning thing to recognize. But then you have to ask yourself, well, surely we didn't replace that sycamore tree with a panacea tree or a conifer tree, bigger and stronger. But that's exactly what we did at Ground Zero. They brought cranes in, and they brought this tree in that fits the description, a bigger tree, an evergreen, a conifer, a panacea tree, and they planted it in the place of the fallen sycamore. And they called it the Tree of Hope.
Uh-huh.
And as an interesting side note, which is not in the movie or the book.
Let me just get you to hold on to that. Excuse me, Joseph. We'll pick up on that on the other side. Joseph Ferra, WorldNetDaily.com, the Isaiah 9:10 Judgment, here on The Conspiracy Show. Stay with us. The Isaiah 9:10 Judgment. Joseph Ferra is the producer of this new documentary, which is based on the research of a Messianic Jew by the name of Rabbi Jonathan Kahn, and delving into this ancient mystery that perhaps foretells America's future and the parallels between what is happening in the United States, certainly since 9/11, and what transpired in then the Northern Kingdom of Sumeria are quite startling. Now, I want to get back to the sycamore tree. I've been to, I believe it's Trinity St. Paul Church at Ground Zero, and I remember seeing this bronze statue of this sycamore, and I didn't understand the significance of it, but I do now. So here's the thing, though, that I think is even, I mean, if that's not enough, talk to me about the significance of the sycamore tree in terms of, you know, the financial nerve center of America and Wall Street, the sycamore tree and Wall Street. What's the connection there?
Yeah, it's a very good question, because really there, you know, 9/11 is just the first attack. There's another one that follows, and it was as a direct result of 9/11, we have the Wall Street crash of 2001, and it was devastating to the economy, and if you go back to the late 18th century, the late 1700s, what we know as Wall Street today, the American Stock Exchange, the New York Stock Exchange, began in the late 1700s when traders and merchants began meeting under a tree. And we know that it's called today the Buttonwood Agreement. The Buttonwood Agreement is what became the basis for the New York Stock Exchange. And, you know, well, what is a buttonwood tree? A buttonwood tree is a sycamore tree.
There you go.
It is, in fact, that sycamore tree that was felled on 9/11. And, of course, the consequences of that were also a devastated economy in the United States, which began when the stock market crashed, really just days after 9/11.
I mean, it's remarkable. I mean, outside of Central Park, you know, you're pretty hard-pressed to find a tree in Manhattan.
Exactly.
And of all the trees to be felled during the 9/11 attacks, it's the sycamore, which arguably is the symbol. It's the foundation of Wall Street, the financial center of America.
Right. And if you don't mind me jumping ahead a little bit here, because this is also a key to the harbingers, is the significance of understanding what only a Messianic Jew could tell us about, which is the Shemitah.
Yes.
The key to the harbingers is the significance of the Shemitah. The Shemitah is a Sabbath year, which happens every 7 years. It happens beginning on Elul 29 on the Hebrew calendar. And to review, on September 17th, 2001, 6 days after the attack at Ground Zero, it was the beginning of the economic calamity that was associated with 9/11 directly. It began with the lowering of interest rates by the Fed, resulted in the collapse of the stock market. September 17th, 2001, was Elul 29 on the Hebrew calendar, believe it or not. So it was a Shemitah year that began, meaning all debts are canceled and the land is given a rest in ancient Israel. But it also means literally falling down. It means letting things fall, letting the economy fall. Don't worry about it. Debts are canceled. And also significantly, exactly 7 years later, on September 29, 2008, marked the next big crash on Wall Street. September 29, 2008, fell on Elul 29, exactly 7 years later on the Hebrew calendar. It was another Shemitah. So, you know, as a newsman, I look at this, and the obvious first question to me is, when is the next Shemitah? And if your mind works like mine, I will tell you, it's not in the book, it's not in the video, because Jonathan doesn't like to speculate about things in the future. On the Hebrew calendar, it falls every 7 years on Elul 29. What does that mean to those of us who use, you know, the pagan calendar? It means September 13th, 2015. Now, I don't know what's going to happen on that day, but I think it's a date worth watching. Because a clear pattern has been established. I don't believe it's a coincidence what happened in America on Elul 29 in 2001 and 2008. And I think it would be foolish to ignore the possibility that a greater judgment, if you will, might be in the works, especially if America continues to kind of move in this path of denial about what God is trying to tell us.
Joseph, can I get you to hold on for one more quick segment? We'll be back. Joseph Farah, the Isaiah 9:10 judgment. Stay with us. And welcome back. And we're talking about Isaiah 9:10, this biblical prophecy, which has been decoded by Rabbi Jonathan Kahn. He's a Messianic Jew, a pastor in New Jersey. And he is he and his decoding work, I suppose, are the subjects of a new documentary called The Isaiah 9:10 Judgment. It's a WorldNet Daily film, and the producer, Joseph Farah, the editor and the CEO and founder of WorldNetDaily.com, is with us discussing this. Now, we were talking about the Shemitah, which is every 7 years where debts are forgiven. Now, in a time of, I guess, plenty and when things are going well, you know, this is the Shemitah is a good thing. I mean, you're forgiving debts. Mm-hmm. But when you are under judgment, when the nation is being judged by God, then it's obviously it's got a very negative connotation. It's a falling away, or obviously coinciding with two economic cataclysms. One which was precipitated by the 9/11 attacks, September 17th, of course, stock market crash, and then go ahead 7 years and it falls again on the precise day of the next Shemitah, September 29th, 2008, the biggest crash in Wall Street history. And I believe, we're working in all these number sevens. Didn't the market actually fall that day 777 points?
That's right. In case the message didn't resonate.
Yeah, how many times do you have to be, hit over the head?
Yeah.
But I want to dial it back to King Solomon. And because he was sort of warning his people that if they didn't, carry on the straight and narrow and live according to God's laws, that this sort of judgment would happen. And talk to me about,
at the consecration of the first temple, Solomon is praying to God. He's consecrating his nation to God. Really, this is like the real birth of Israel takes place when the temple is finally built, finished, and consecrated to God. And God speaks to Solomon, and he tells him Solomon wants to know, well, what happens if, inevitably we start to stray from you, and he asks God, what is the answer to that? And there's a very famous answer that anybody who's, a student of the Bible can remember, found in 2 Chronicles 7:14. If my people, which are called by my name, shall humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then I will hear their prayers and forgive their sin and heal their land. That's the prescription that God gives to Solomon at that very scene. And, of course, there's a principle that Jonathan Kahn talks about in The Harbinger and in Isaiah 9:10 judgment, which is that the judgment always comes back to the point of consecration, which ultimately, in the case of the southern kingdom of Judah, followed the fall of the northern kingdom. And by the way, it was a direct result of not following the Shemitah, by the way. That's why Judah was exiled for 70 years, because they didn't follow the law of the Shemitah. Now, what about the United States? What does that mean to us? Well, guess what the point of consecration for the United States of America was? And this is the most astounding thing of all.
This is going back to 1789. Newly minted President George Washington is being sworn in the Capitol.
Right, the Capitol, which, how many Americans know that the first capital of the United States was New York City?
Mm.
That's where George Washington was sworn in. That's where the first Congress of the United States was sworn in. That's where the first Supreme Court of the United States was sworn in. And they were sworn in at Federal Hall, which, by the way, is just a few blocks away from 9/11. The foundation of Federal Hall was cracked by the shockwaves from 9/11. So that's where George Washington is sworn in. And after he's sworn in, and by the way, before being sworn in, he called for a day of a prayer and fasting for that day as a sign to God that the United States of America was going to follow him. And he leads a procession of the entire Congress of the United States, the Supreme Court, the executive, all three branches of government walk on foot to a little church a few blocks away. And we all know what that church was, don't we, Richard?
Trinity St. Paul.
That's St. Paul's Church, where you can go today and see exactly where George Washington had a little pew all to himself. It's still there, preserved with his Bible there, and the whole government of the United States went there to pray. What's even lesser known is the fact that originally that church owned all the land that was destroyed, all of Ground Zero. The church owned that property at the time that George Washington was sworn in.
Wow. So that was where George Washington essentially, through their prayers, consecrated the United States of America.
You got it.
And as you pointed out, the judgment always comes back to the exact point of the consecration, the consecrated
right.
ground.
Right. Just as the temple was destroyed in Jerusalem by Nebuchadnezzar, there we go. I mean, this is, you know, that's what was destroyed on 9/11. And that limited strike that I believe was meant as a warning from God that our time was short if we didn't turn back and follow him.
How can people get a copy of the Isaiah 9:10 judgment, Joseph?
Well, it's available most everywhere, certainly Amazon, the WND Superstore. That's where I recommend you buy it. But but it's literally everywhere. It's in Walmarts and Sam's Clubs and every Christian book and movie store, and many just, you know, of the big retailers have it as well.
Just a thought occurred to me, just a few moments remaining here before we say goodbye, but has anyone gotten a copy of this to, I don't know, Tom Daschle or John Kerry or, not John
Great
Kerry, John
like
Edwards?
I do. The first thing I did before we made the movie, and we've continued to do this ever since, is I did everything in my power to reach out to Daschle and to John Edwards and find out why they used Isaiah 9:10 as the basis for their speech. And really, in Daschle's case, it's the punchline of his speech. In case of Edwards, it's the foundation of his speech. I'm pretty good at this. This is what I do for a living, getting people on the phone or getting them to answer my emails. And we have tried every method I could think of, even mutual friends, attorneys that I knew who worked with them, the attorney who defended Edwards. I spoke to him, you know, in his big trial. I said, look, I just want to have 5 minutes with John Edwards, and here's what I want to talk about. The problem is they know what I want to talk about, and I think everybody knows about, you know, Isaiah 9:10 at this point. I think it's a very difficult question for them to answer.
Is it too late, do you think? Has the die been cast? Is now the United States going to essentially feel the wrath of God?
I think the hour is late. I wish I could say I saw more repentance and reflection than I think the kind that God wanted us to have after that attack. But look at the tremendous success of the Harbinger and the Isaiah 9:10 judgment. They have reached millions of people. Millions of people. I mean, you know, if people have seen this movie or read the book, they know what we're talking about here. They feel it. They see it clearly. And that's what I think is so important. I don't believe, you know, I used to think about that Second Chronicles 7:14 verse, and I used to think, wow, that's a tall order. It's a tall order because I used to think it meant, wow, you know, America would have to all collectively get down on our knees and start repenting. But that's not what it says. It says, if my people, which are called by my name. So So it's just to believers. If believers do this, it will save America. It will, our nation will be healed. And that's the key. Can that happen? Is that too much to ask, that believers get a clear picture of what God is telling us today? I don't think that's so out of the question.
You know, it's funny that, not funny, but I get the sense, I think a lot of people have this sense, that things are coming to what my father used to call an acute angle. Billy Graham, of course, 93, 94 years old, in his sort of last letter to America, again, making the same kind of warnings, time for America to repent. And he quoted his late wife, Ruth, who said, if God doesn't judge America, then God owes Sodom and Gomorrah an apology.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's something to think about.
Yes, indeed.
Because there's nothing that Sodom and Gomorrah didn't do that we are not doing. That's the point.
Well, Joseph, listen, thank you for spending some time with us tonight. Congratulations on the Isaiah 9:10 judgment, and I continue to enjoy WorldNet Daily immensely. Thank you.
Thank you, Richard. Great being with you.
All right. Joseph Farah. All right. Now, we mentioned that the documentary, based largely, almost solely, really, on the research of Rabbi Jonathan Cahn, this Messianic Jew who sort of decoded Isaiah 9:10 judgment. And Jonathan, we tried to get to Jonathan Cahn on the program tonight, wasn't able to, but we will, hopefully, in the coming weeks. I'd like to get Jonathan on before Christmas, not necessarily to talk about the Isaiah 9:10 judgment, although that may come into it, but he has some amazing insights into not only biblical prophecy, but as we, again, approach Christmas season, some amazing evidence that Jesus Christ was not born on December 25th. I think we all sort of had that sense, but he's actually pretty well has it down to the day, the month and the day, and he can walk us through that. So we'll get Jonathan Cahn on the program as quickly as possible. Many of you still emailing saying, what's going on with richardserrett.com? I've got a team out in Nova Scotia, actually, working on it day and night to get the new improved richardserrett.com up and running. So look for that. As always, say hello on Twitter at Richard Serrett. Follow the truth. Welcome, friends. Good to have you aboard. Just a heads up, what's coming up on the program. A little bit later, towards what we call in the radio biz as the bottom of the hour, our good friend Victor Vigiani will be with us. Now, you know Victor, who's a frequent guest on the program. Whenever we delve into the UFO extraterrestrial arena, Victor is usually riding shotgun on this program. And Victor is going to join us by Skype a little bit later. Victor, as it turns out, is quite the investigative journalist. And what he has uncovered, well, this is actually has been ongoing for several years, but I guess through the Freedom of Information Act, he has obtained a number of NORAD documents which tend to suggest or tend to support the idea that Canadian Air Force fighter jets have engaged UFOs. And for the first time tonight, he's going to go public with those documents. So that'll be a little bit later. Before we get to that, and coming up just shortly, do you remember the back of comic books? You used to see these ads for X-ray goggles. I always remember that. They used to have this ad, and if you sold, there was a newsletter back then. It was called Grit. And if you sold, you could basically become a grit carrier or a distributor. And if you sold enough grit newsletters, you would earn enough money to buy these X-ray goggles. And what adolescent boy didn't want a pair of X-ray goggles? I'll let you sort of connect the dots there. Of course, they never worked. But we have a gentleman standing by who is the real deal when it comes to X-ray eyes. They call him the man with X-ray eyes. And he's been a frequent guest and a good friend of this program for many, many years, and he's standing by just a moment. Before we get that, coming up next week on the program, I think this is very important. I want to talk to you about it. It's the U.S. government apparently has this secret plan to shut off cell phones and the internet. And this month, the United States District Court for the District of Columbia ruled that the Department of Homeland Security must make its plan to shut off the internet and cell phone communications available to the American public. And you're saying, wait a minute, they have a plan to shut off the internet and cell phone communications? Yes, they do. And they've been keeping it a secret. But a number of intrepid reporters, again, through the Freedom of Information Act, have been trying to get the Department of Homeland Security to release details about this plan, but nobody knows anything about it. But it's called a kill switch. And a kill switch is the government has this authority to disconnect commercial and private wireless networks affecting both cell phones and the internet in the event of an emergency, such as a viable threat of a terrorist attack. Oh, where have we heard that before? Right? Does the term false flag mean anything to you? So here we have, now I don't know what the technology would be involved, but we're going to find out next week on the program. How would such a kill switch work? Is there some sort of big red button that President Obama could push to turn off the wireless networks in the United States and by extension perhaps here in Canada? So what is this plan, this secret plan to shut off cell phones and the internet, and why is the Department of Homeland Security going to court to prevent them having to reveal this information to the public? So we'll discuss that next week on the program. All right, back to the man with X-ray eyes. I think I've known Douglas James Cottrell for probably 20 years, going back to my days as a producer in talk radio, and he's been certainly a mainstay of this program. He is, of course, a remote viewer. But he's also a medical intuitive, and hence the name The Man with X-Ray Eyes. He's also an accomplished author, The Secrets of Life, and The Law of One, which we've talked about recently on the program. And he's also the author of The New Renaissance, A Prophecy of 2012 and Beyond, which has been published now in I think, a dozen languages or so. Anyway, it's great to have our good friend Douglas James Cottrell back on the program. Hello, Douglas.
It's always a pleasure to be here, Richard. This is a fantastic show tonight, listening to the previous guests and all the revelations in Isaiah and what's happening with the world and what I'm talking about as far as some of the predictions I've made on your show about the oceans heating up and the North Pole slipping around and the ice caps melting and all those things. It looks like, doom and gloom, but it's a fascinating opinion when you see in Bible prophecy that these things have been predicted, and America is following in the footsteps of those prophecies. Just amazing.
We've had you on many times in the capacity of a remote viewer, where you've talked about Earth changes and so forth. But we haven't in quite a while had you on in the capacity of a medical intuitive. Now, What is a medical intuitive?
Well, it's a term that's recently come up in the last few years, which means somebody has the ability intuitively to see a person's health condition. Like Edgar Cayce or Ross Peterson or Paul Solomon or even myself over the last 40 years, it's almost 40 years now since I've started, there is this ability to intuitively look forward, first of all, to see the future. Second of all, to look into somebody's body and be able to see what's going on. And clairvoyance is the talent, meaning clear seeing. And so the term medical intuitive has been bounced around for a long time, which means that intuitive people would be able to say, oh, I see you have a problem with your heart, or you have a problem with some other part of your body. And they make a medical, this is not a correct term, but they make a medical diagnosis, which is a loose term for really clairvoyance. I don't diagnose anyone. What I do is I see into their body. And it was a long time ago when I think it was Ron Knight up in Richmond Hill that tagged that label on me, the man with X-ray eyes, when I was doing a show a long time ago. It was in my early 20s back then. But the idea is that people call, and we've done many shows here, over the last, and we haven't done, as you say, recently, where people would call up from your audience, which are thousands and thousands of people, and with somebody saying their name, John or Mary or whatever, I would be able to look at them in a remote viewing, mind projecting kind of way, and be able to see inside their body. And I would say, oh, I see a problem here, I see a problem there.
It's awfully dark in there. What do you, I mean, what exactly do you see? How do you see?
Well,
do you see organs and flesh? And
You're hitting a nail on the head. Recently, in the last couple of months, something's changed, which my power or ability to see clearer is enhanced. And when you apply the telekinetic ability to move bones, to do spiritual healing, if you will, or energy healing, as they say, you can see clearly inside a body, and you can also affect the body by this energy that, for lack of a better term, this life energy that you're able to project with imagery and with skill, which is what I'm going to be showing people at our upcoming conference here in Toronto in a couple of weeks, that anyone can develop this ability. But you're right. Sometimes it's dark inside a body, and sometimes it's very luminous. I was looking in a lady's abdomen the other day. She was complaining why she was having a lot of pain in her stomach, and I could see an ulcerated condition where I saw the lining of the stomach had dissolved, and I could actually see the muscle and the red blood or redness of blood in the body. Now, again, this is not gory, but it can be. It's not for the squeamish, but it sort of comes upon you as you start to see things. It's like looking through, you know, that beer commercial where they have several glasses in a row and
yes.
You can't see clearly. Well, it's like taking them in reverse. You take one away until eventually you can see clearer, more clear, and eventually you're looking specifically at an organ as if you're looking at a picture. And this is the ability I have. And for me, it's like a movie.
Saying though that anybody can learn to do this?
Yes, anybody can do it. Now, some people are naturally capable. Other people have to strive to accomplish this. And there are some people in society who cannot see in their mind. They cannot see a vision, but they can feel things. So those people, this is the test. If I say to the audience, can you see the Eiffel Tower in your mind, in your mind's eye? If you can see that, then you have the capability of developing your clairvoyance. For those people who can't, they have the capability of developing their clairsentience, which is their feeling. You know, I feel hot, I feel cold, I feel worried, something's wrong, I feel whatever. This goes into premonition and precognition, where clairvoyance goes into prediction and prophecy. And this is what I'm teaching people and have for a long time. We have our Many Mansions Spiritual Center in Hamilton, which is a huge organization. We're almost ready for the official opening because of all the upgrades we've had to do to the building. But people have over the years in all the countries I've traveled to, and I've traveled extensively in Norway and Spain and Poland and different places across the U.S., and I'm back here in Canada now starting a tour to teach people, to show people that you can develop these abilities. The clairsentient abilities, the feeling abilities, the telekinetic ability to be able to move wands or pendulums. But those are the indicators. The real thing is to be able to affect a physical body. Somebody had a whiplash in Spain a couple of days ago. I could see very clearly two bones, the second or third bone in the top and the third or fourth or fifth bone in the bottom. Can't remember which one. But I was able to push my fingers through the air. This might even look magical, but it's not. It's recorded in the Bible. This is how spiritual healing at a distance occurs. And I was able to put the bones back in place, the top bone in line with the others and the bottom one back in line. And it was confirmed. The day before, the lady went and had an x-ray and saw a physician. And the day after this healing, which was the third day after, the bones were back in place. She had confirmation of it. We were talking earlier about the previous host here, George. He had a similar healing a long time ago.
Wait, yes, we'll take a time out. We'll come back. We'll talk about our good old friend George Ginescu, whose program precedes mine here on our flagship station, AM 740. He's on his way up the Highway 404 to his home in near Barrie, listening to this program. And yeah, we'll take you back to something that happened on this program several years ago. That sort of demonstrates your point. Douglas James Cottrell, the man with X-ray eyes, Canada's Edgar Casey. We'll open up the phone lines as well. And we're not doing medical diagnosis here. As always, consult your doctor. We don't have a disclaimer, so I'll say it. But with X-ray eyes, can remotely peer into your body and perhaps tell you what might be ailing you. We'll do that when we come back. The Conspiracy Show. My name is Richard Serrett. Don't go away. And welcome back. Douglas James Cottrell is with us, the man with X-ray eyes, Canada's Edgar Casey, the author of The Secrets of Life, and also The New Renaissance, a prophecy for 2012 and beyond, which has been now translated into a number of languages, Spanish, Portuguese, French. Douglas is here in the capacity of a medical intuitive, and if you'd like to call in, he can peer remotely inside your body and let you know what's going on in there and maybe what you need to be concerned about. Again, not a medical diagnosis, and consult your physician. Also, I want to point out that Douglas will be here in Toronto December the 14th from 2 to 5 p.m. giving live demonstrations of telepathy and telekinesis. Plus, we'll be inviting your questions and your intuitive impressions. That's at the Holiday Inn downtown, 30 Carleton Street at Yonge. $75 in advance, $100 at the door. To reserve tickets, call 905-393-5104, 905-393-5105, or just log on to douglasjamescottrell.com. December 14th, 2 to 5 p.m., The Secrets to Perceiving the Future and Developing Your ESP. All right, Tony is in Brampton. Hello, Tony. Welcome to The Conspiracy Show.
Hello, Richard and Douglas.
Hi, Tony.
How are you?
Well, so far we're doing okay, I think.
Good.
All right. Now, how does this work? Do you need any more from him, or can you just tell Tony what he needs to know?
Well, ask me a question, Tony. What do you want to know?
Okay, I suffer from Crohn's disease. Is there anything you can do about that?
Okay, well, let me look in my back and my mind and see. My attention immediately goes to your back. You have some, it looks like the vertebrae in your back are almost like stacked, like blocks one on top of the other. And that tells me that the nerve flows going from the back around the front or into the intestine aren't working. You have a bile problem. It looks like it's almost like cake inside your intestine that I'm looking at. And I think that your diet needs to be more of a Mediterranean one, and you need a lot of grape juice, mixing the grape juice 2 ounces with 2 ounces of water, and taking that before food's ingested will help you. You have one of those blood types that have great difficulty in moving food through the intestine, but it comes from your back. I'm looking at from the last dorsal to most of the lumbars in your back, almost like they're just like a straight line, which they should be in a nice passive curve. And that seems to be the problems coming. You also have some palpitations in your heart, and the dryness in your throat, or what's going on in your throat, is not really related to the Crohn's, but it's got something to do with, you have some infection in your ear or throat, and it's just red in my eye. Does that sound pretty close to what's going on?
Yes, thank you very much.
Okay,
so let me if I could just jump in here, because this is fascinating. So Tony, the spine, is that true? Do you have back problems?
Lower back problems, yes.
Mm-hmm. And that's
from an old Air Force injury.
And could that? Have you been told that might be related to your Crohn's disease?
No,
or there's a connection?
Not at all.
Probably not, Richard. No.
No.
He needs to see an osteopath, which is a passive way to get the bones, get the muscles to relax, because the muscles hold the body together, and the bones hold the body apart. The trouble is the tendons sneak up on us, and they shrink. And when they shrink, it's really hard to get them separate. You need good massage using, you know, which Tony could do with castor oil and heat packs and infrared light. But needs to see an osteopath. Chiropractor would hurt, and that'll start the nerve flows. And the next thing I'm looking at, because these images come very fast when I see people, is that you need to go into some whirlpool with apple cider vinegar in there to get the nerve flows stimulating. Your problem is that nerves are not carrying the messages from the medullum and cerebellum or the upper back of the brain, because you have also some difficulties in the top two bones in your neck, and your head's tilted back a little in my vision. So you're messed up a little bit, Tony, but osteopath, chiropractor, massage, whirlpool, anything to get those muscles freed up will let the nerve flow start. But look at a Mediterranean diet or a Vietnamese-type diet, and drink a lot of red wine or watered-down grape juice. And this will help the digestion.
All right, Tony in Brampton, thank you for that.
Now, thank you very much.
You're welcome,
again,
Tony. Good luck.
You're not a medical doctor, so we ask listeners to consult their medical doctors. But where does this information come to you? You're throwing around words like, you know, lumbar and cerebellum, and you have no medical training. So is this coming from the Akashic Record, or where does this come from?
Well, when I listen to you, Richard, and you know I've said this before, you're an amazing host. I don't know where you get the vocabulary you do, and you're able to pull things out of the air. It's because of your experience and your capabilities. I'm not that intellectual a person, but over 40 years of dealing with people like Edgar Casey or Ross Peterson and finding out about what's going on, you get the terms because the readings would say this or that, you know, atrial syndrome valve here, or large intestine there, and you find these terms out. And so they come to my mind because they're in memory. It's not a training, but it's a memory. And so when I'm looking at these different things, it's like, flash, 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 flash. In the old days, it used to be flash, 1, 2, 3, flash, 1, 2, 3. And you'll see that same ability with psychic people who are trying to, they're almost like they're having some gut-wrenching movement. They're trying to, like, pull things out of the air. It's so difficult for them to start with. Indeed, it is. It's a matter of getting past the rational mind, which is your logic, intellectual reasoning and factors in your brain, your personality. But after you get by that, and they come very quickly, in 40 years now, so I'm pulling terms out because my mind is going around like Tony's body, my attention is scanning him. He once told me that before, it's like we're scanning people. And I think it was a long time ago on your show where there was a lady standing in a doorway, and I was looking at her, and she reported later that it felt like a heat beam going from down her body, from her head to her toes, and then back up. And then I asked her, if she was standing in a doorway with a phone on the wall, back in the old days when we had hardware phones, and she said, yes, she was. And then I said, who are the people around the corner? And I could see a beer bottle. And with that, we heard, oh, my God, he's looking at us or something.
Right, right.
And the bottle fell off the table. So it's remote viewing, but it's right there. And it seems to be the person's name attaches, my attention goes there. And then I just follow my attention. My attention goes through the body, as we did with Tony. It jumped all over, and he confirmed he had all these difficulties.
All right. Is it Walter in London? Walter, welcome to The Conspiracy Show. You're on the air.
Yes, hello.
Hi there.
Hi, Walter.
How are you?
So far, okay. What can I do for you tonight, Walter?
Well, I'm getting up to an age, but my health's been good. I'm suffering from rosacea, and I'm concerned about inflammation. It's just in the news all the time now.
I didn't quite get that.
Concerned about inflammation.
Inflammation, and you're talking about leaky gut syndrome. Is that what you're referring to? Because that's where my attention goes.
I'm sorry?
Leaky gut syndrome is my attention goes to your abdomen.
I see.
And throughout your body, I think you could do things like slippery elm tea to help stopgap the intestine. You look across your shoulders, look really stiff, and they're red. I'm looking at and also dark in your neck, so I'm getting really poor blood supply, blood flow in your upper body and also into your legs, and your feet look like they're like cartoon, like your toes are really big. You have problems in the toes?
I'm sorry?
Do you have problems in your feet or toes?
No, not really. No.
Okay, well, they're ballooning up in my image or my mind here,
mm-hmm.
And that would take me to some sort of effect that you have either gout developing or circulation or lymph, you know, usually when you see feet expand, circulation and a lymph system problem.
Well, gout's in my family.
Okay, well, I'm picking this up. You might not be aware of it, but, you know, this is where my attention is going now. I always follow my attention and spit out. And this edema in your legs might be what I'm looking at, like a fluid condition. However, inflammation in your body, castor oil massages for the upper back. And I'm also looking at somebody pressing on the back in a certain way. Like a chiropractor, but they've got their hands going up and down your spine in a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say some sort of shiatsu or some other specialized massage for that.
All right, thank you.
All right, okay. Walter, thank you very much for that. We before we get to the back to the phones, we were going to talk about my colleague here, George Ginescu. And he, one night, this was going back a couple of years ago, you came into the studio and we noticed that George was hobbling around. And
well,
I can't remember.
Well, more like you noticed. I didn't see him, actually.
That's right. That's right. He left before you arrived.
Right.
And George was hobbling around. And I said to George, I think he had something in his knee or in his back. I can't remember. I think it was his back.
Yeah. Well, you said something wrong with his leg. You noticed he was walking down the hall on you hallway, and you saw him limping.
That's right. So
that's
I asked
where we started.
That's right. So I asked. I said, George, what's wrong? And he, you know, oh, I've got this horrible leg problem or back problem. This is going back a few years. I'm a little foggy. So I said, well, just luck would have it, I have my good friend Douglas James Cottrell coming in, and he's a remote viewer, and he's a medical intuitive, and maybe, you know, I can get him to send out some healing energy to you. And George kind of said, oh, sure, that'd be great, ha, ha, ha. So George gets in his car after his show, and he's driving up the 404 on his way home, and it takes him, a good hour to get up there. And usually he listens to me to keep him awake while he's driving home. Now, George is no spring chicken. He's going to be 80 years old. So you come in, and you sit down in the chair, and we turn the mics on, and I explain the situation with George, and I said, would you mind sending out some healing energy? George is having problems with his leg or his back. And so you did, live on the air. Now, I didn't know at the time, but George wasn't listening to the show that night. His son had called him on his cell phone. And I guess maybe I'm telling tales out of school. You're not supposed to be talking on your cell phone. He had hands-free. He was hands-free, of course.
It was obeying law.
So he didn't hear that you were in the studio talking to them. But all of a sudden, the next week, George reported back to me. He said, I'm driving along, and all of a sudden, the weirdest thing happened. I felt this burning sensation in my back, and I thought I was having a heart attack. Mm-hmm. He pulled his car over to the side of the highway, got out, and was in a bit of a panic. He thought, this is it. And then the pain, that burning sensation subsided. The next thing he knew, pain in his back and his leg were gone.
And he continued on home.
And then I told him, you know, when I saw him that week, I said, well, didn't you hear Douglas was in the studio? He sent out that healing energy to you. And he said, I didn't hear the show. I was on the phone with my son on the way home. And when I told him what you did, he fell out of his chair.
Well, I recall that you asked me to send some energy to him, and we started off in the back of his neck and shoulders, and we sent, had my hands in the air like I am now, and sending this energy out, just like biblical times. All the saints are in the temples, you see them with their hands up on their shoulders, so I have my hands up like that. And we're sending energy out, and we started off in his neck and shoulders, and went down his spine to his pelvis, and I was said, you know, sending heat there. And of course, with the people who are listening, it amplifies the energy, the power, if you will. And this is what I said. I saw this energy going down. And the next time I saw George is what he said. He felt this terrible pain or this warm feeling in the top of his shoulders and went down his spine to his hips. And that's when he told us that he was having his heart attack. But the most important thing was, this was an actual miracle. He was far away. He didn't know what was happening. I was on the air live doing this. The pain went away permanently, even till today when we mentioned hello today. He said the pain has never come back in his hip. He had a genuine miracle, and this was all documented on the air.
All right. Who do we have next, Tim? Do you remember who we have coming up on the phones? All right. Let's just put them on the air and find out who it is. Roll the dice. Hello, sir or ma'am. You are on the air. Who do we have with us? Hello, caller.
Hello.
Hi, who is this?
This is Bruce from Scarborough.
Hey, Bruce from Scarborough. Welcome to the program, and you're on the line with Douglas James Cottrell.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
What can we do tonight for you, Bruce?
Well, I've been diagnosed basically with rheumatoid arthritis. I get swelling in my wrists real bad. My hands are starting to deform a little. My knees are terrible.
Okay, well, my impression first goes to your kidneys, Bruce. My attention first goes to your kidneys.
It does.
This is where I think the problem is in your body, and this is the place to start. You need acupuncture, or you need castor oil packs on your kidneys, because you're starting to develop that edema problem that I spoke of with a previous caller. And the problem is that your body's not getting rid of the toxins and the sediments in the body. Now, one of the remedies that I recommend, again, I'm not a medical doctor, and I'm just throwing this out because it comes to my mind intuitively, is I see you with black cherry juice, or at least cherry juice that will help. And also, I think that if you get into other juices, you'll find that your body will respond very quickly. You should have vegetable juices, and cranberry juice as well, grape juice, and grape seed extract comes to my mind as well. These will be things to help you with your arthritic condition. But castor oil is anti-inflammatory. It's a Edgar Cayce remedy. Ross Peterson, myself, have recommended it almost in, 90% of the time for people who have really difficult situations like you are. But my attention goes to your kidneys. This is the place to start.
Did you say castor oil?
Yeah, castor oil. Not talking about ingesting it. I'm talking about rubbing it on.
Okay. All right, rubbing it on. Never heard that.
All right, Bruce, make sure you consult your physician. But there you go.
Go see a skilled acupuncturist. Okay.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Now, I've always wondered, since I've known you, and I may have asked you this before, but as a medical intuitive, I mean, are you able to turn this off? Because let's say, for example, someone comes up to you and they want to know, you know, what's going on inside their body, and you peer inside and the news is not good. Let's say their body is just riddled with cancer.
Yes.
Are you able to, I mean, what do you say to someone like that?
Well, it depends on the person, and you see what's going on and you tell them what you see. There was a little girl named Sophie, and she had a burst vein one night, and the father came and asked, would her soul like to give up the organs in her body? And I said, she's not going to die. She's going to come out of her coma the next day, and things are going to be better. And they were. So you see, you rescue some people. Other times when you say, I don't think there's much I can do. A couple of fellows who are Marines, ex-Marines in California, had to say to his brother the other day, I don't think that your brother's going to make it. So it's what I tell him what to see. But again, as I'm a counselor, a professional counselor for 40 years, I'm able to handle those difficult situations.
All right, listen, we're going to get to Victor Vigiani. Tim, if you could tell Victor Vigiani with the NORAD documents, we'll be with him in a few moments. I want to do one more quick segment with Douglas. Douglas James Cottrell, Medical Intuitive, The Secrets to Perceiving the Future and Developing Your ESP here in Toronto, December 14th. I'll give you more details when we come back. The Conspiracy Show. Stay with us. And just a few moments remain here with Douglas James Cottrell. Victor Vigiani from Zealand News Network is standing by. Thank you, Victor, for your patience. We're going to talk about the NORAD documents that he's uncovered and really talk about it, in detail for the first time in public regarding Canadian jet fighters encountering or interacting with UFOs. So Douglas James Cottrell stays with us just for a few moments yet. And again, here in the capacity of a medical intuitive. And just also want to draw to your attention again, he'll be in town December 14th, 2013, 2 to 5 p.m. at the Holiday Inn downtown, 30 Carlton Street. And just log on to douglasjamescottrell.com for ticket information. But he'll be teaching, giving live demonstrations of telepathy and telekinesis and revealing the secrets to perceiving the future and developing your SP. Now, I wanted to, kind of a personal thing here. I have a relative, my mother-in-law, and she has a great deal of arthritic pain. She was just telling me this evening at supper, you know, her bones just ache terribly. And I'm just wondering if maybe you could send out some healing energy to her, and what can you tell me? What's going on there?
Well, as we briefly mentioned off the air, and my first impression was that her diet's really bad. And I would suggest that she looks more, again, the nutrition and assimilation of nutrition in her body is really poor, and she has a weak elimination system going on. Now, I have my hands in the air like that, and I'm sending out the energy to her, and we're noting that what time it is.
12:37 Eastern.
And she may be waking up right now and saying, what the heck's going on? The energy coming out of my hand is moderate. It's not like really fast and hard. It's a moderate energy going out, and I'm going through her body. What she needs is a massage, and she needs hot and cold baths, really, really hot and really, really cold, one after the other. And that's going to make the circulation go out to the skin surface, and it's going to go back down. This is a lady who hasn't perspired in a long time. It's a lady who's been inside a lot, and we need to get her outside. We need her getting perspiring to get the poison out of her body through perspiration. Her kidneys are a little shriveled up, so we need a lot of water going through the body. And the small intestine is really packed with a lot of stuff, fat, and just stuff. So the problems in the intestine. So I'm sending this energy out to her to try to get the sediment out of it. But she needs to change her diet greatly. And, if we can get her into a situation of more fish, baked, boiled, or broiled. No fatty foods, no breads, no cheeses, nothing to jam up the intestine. She'll do better because what's happening is the body's polluted. It's holding on to the sediment that should be given out. You know, when you have a brand new baby and you give the baby breast milk or milk, and you know, you see what goes in, but you say, where's all this stuff coming out? Because it's huge. This is how the body's supposed to work. And as we get older, that eliminations go smaller and smaller. And this is what the main situation with your relative is. I would suggest enema therapy, and I would suggest a lot of olive oil to try to keep the body.
Well, she certainly had, there's lots of olive oil.
But no cheeses, nothing like that. This is all dairy products are really bad for her.
Are you able to, you know, that old saying, physician heal thyself? I mean, you're not a physician, you're not a medical doctor, but, I mean, are you able to?
I'm in perfect health, except that I'm limping around. Too many airplanes, too many cars, football injuries, and not paying attention. I'm now getting some osteopathic adjustment for myself, and my famous limp is not going away, but I'm in an airplane for 9, 10, 12 hours at a time, and then when I go to different countries, I sit behind a desk and I talk to people for 9 or 10 hours straight, and so I haven't been taking care of myself. And now I'm sending energy to myself. My eyes are getting a little better. I'm 63 now, or because I'm dyslexic, I'm only 36. Actually, I'll be 64 at the end of the month. So I'm able to keep myself. I mean, I don't look like I'm 64 years old.
No.
I have that.
Not a day over 58.
Okay. I have that healer's look where it's a youthful look. You know, my hair's not white, although it's thinning, but I'm in pretty good shape. I got my teeth, I got my life, you know, I'm doing okay. But if I were to pay more attention, do more exercise, I would probably be a lot better off. But yeah, I can heal myself and I can see what's going on. I have dreams ahead of time to eat this or do that. And to pay attention to these things is all that I need to do. But anyway, yeah, I've got some old football injuries that are creeping up on me now.
Okay, now I don't want to embarrass Tim, but Tim likes the Red Bull. Are you still drinking like what, two or three Red Bulls a night, Tim? How many?
Tim, get away from that stuff.
He's always drinking tea now. How is Tim doing?
Good man. Well, the Red Bull stuff, all that's good for stimulation, but that just drives your metabolism. It plays havoc with your pancreas and your spleen. For young people, energy, good, but, you know, like me, I used to bang my head on the wall playing football, and now I'm paying the price from way back when.
I would kill to have Tim's metabolism. Look, he's a hoe handle.
He's doing good. I don't see any problems other than a little bit of indigestion or something in the tummy. Are you, Timmy, are you taking protein shakes or something like that? Because it's not digesting well.
No, he says he's not taking protein shakes.
Yeah. Well, something's not digesting well in his tummy.
Any digestion problems? Any tummy problems, Timmy? No, he's shaking it off.
Yeah, okay.
All right.
Otherwise, in good health.
All right. Well, listen.
And he's behind me. I'm not looking at him, so, you know.
And how about yours truly? How am I doing?
You're in good shape. Blood pressure up and down a little bit of blood sugar issues, just mild, minor. You have, like, thyroid. Not hyperactive, but hypoactive, a little sluggish.
Right. And that's a huge issue now with people, apparently, the thyroid issues. What's going on?
Well, all the glandular, it's called the endocrine system. The hormonal therapy has been overlooked. It should be men and women should be paid attention to, because when you do that, the chemistry in your body works well and you don't get depressed and you need to get more light. Okay, you need to get out there and get a tan. A lot of vitamin D issues there.
And my kids are telling me that. They say, Dad, you're pale.
Well, yeah, pale. Well, I'm not just looking at you pale. You need a lot of vitamin D and sun. You know, if you suffer from a sluggish thyroid and you're a little pale, then you're headed towards.
I got to get back to Greece. Is what I need to do. Mm. All right, Douglas. Always a pleasure. Thank you, my friend. DouglasJamesCottrell.com.
Thank you for having me, Richard. It's always a pleasure to see you, my friend. God bless.
Victor Vigiani and the NORAD documents. When the Conspiracy Show continues, right after this. Welcome back. Victor Vigiani is with us now, joining us by Skype. And Victor usually joins us whenever we delve into the UFO extraterrestrial arena. And he, of course, is the executive director of Zealand News Network. And Victor, as it turns out, is quite the investigative reporter and has been, for a number of years, sort of, I guess, amassing some documents, perhaps through the Freedom of Information Act. We'll find out here in a few moments about that. But this has to do with Canadian Air Force pilots perhaps interacting with UFOs. And Victor's ongoing battle to get some answers from, well, he went right to the top in this case. He contacted then-Defense Minister Peter MacKay here in Canada and had a rather sort of laugh-out-loud response, but we'll get to that right now. Victor Vigiani, welcome once again, my friend. How are you?
Just fine, Richard. How are you doing?
I'm very well. So take us back to what are these documents exactly that you have, and how did you get them?
Well, initially, back in late 2008 and early 2009, the process was rather a long and arduous one. I had found out through some pilots that I had contact with just after a symposium back in 2005. Several pilots did communicate with me. Actually, three of them did, and one of them specifically said to me, Richard, that, oh yes, our jets are scrambled all the time to go and chase after these things, or whatever those what they call unknown tracks are, and it sort of tweaked my interest. And as a result of that, I formulated several Freedom of Information requests, and that's an American term actually. Our term is Access to Information AIA here in Canada, and I sent out one request initially. I think it was late 2007, early 2008, and I didn't get much back because I didn't ask the right question. When you ask the Access to Information people for information, you have to be very, very specific about what you ask for.
They were like pulling a Mayor Rob Ford on you. Do you do drugs? No, I do not do drugs. Do you smoke crack cocaine? No, I do not. Have you ever seen a UFO?
Exactly. If you don't ask the right question, you don't get the answer that you're looking for. So after it's like playing a ping pong game, back and forth against the wall. You the ball keeps on coming back to you with no spin on it. So I eventually asked the right question, and I think this was after three sessions with them, and what they did was they sent back to me. Well over 90 pages, 94 pages actually, about different kinds of UFO events, files, air traffic controller logs, citizen reports, and pretty boring stuff actually. It was really not that consequential. But in the middle of all of those files was a NORAD status and events document, a secret NORAD status and events document, and if people are listening on the internet, they can go right now to the website Zealand Communications Blogspot. That's where the Canadian NORAD Jets document is listed. If you want to look at all the documents, they're right there, and if you want to pan through them, they're all right there too. So they sent me these six pages, and it begins, Richard, with a virtually a blank page, and it's released under the AIA Information Act, unclassified, and the document reads significant events, and there's one sort of rectangle, and it says unknown tracks at W108. It's all filled with technical terms, all kinds of navigational terms. Track remain unknown and faded out at whatever number of feet. But it basically, Richard, the entire document, the first page, 90% of it is redacted under Section S-115, Section 1, which refers to the fact that it has to do with national security. So that first page is entirely redacted. And then if you go on to page 2, a very similar kind of document, a little bit more verbiage in it, but they talk about unknown tracks at a certain altitude. It is also about 50% redacted. And then we go on to page 3, which has about 57 lines in it. And you've got to, if you're looking at the document, it's really kind of strange because the air traffic controller lists each moment by moment, literally almost second by second, event for each jet. These jets take off at 11:55:28, and then they're in the air and doing something. They're joining something at 11:55:38, and their next move is 11:56. Oh, wait. So there's lines here, Richard, that tell the air traffic controller what these jets, these two CF-18 jets, after they take off out of Comox Air Force Base out of Vancouver, they list what these jets are doing literally second by second. There's maybe 15 or 20 seconds between each one of these events. And they're flying in the air, and these things were told to take off and go and chase these three unknown tracks.
Unknown tracks. Is there any further description? Airspeed, aerial maneuvers, shape, size, color?
No, nothing like that at all. They talk about altitude later on in the document. They don't talk about speed other than later on in the document, I think it's on page 3 or page 4, a medical evacuation jet, a Lear 35 medical evacuation jet out of Anchorage, Alaska, was in the area where these tracks were seen. And it communicated with the air traffic controllers that they had seen these things, these two things, but they could not keep up with them. That's what it says. It says on page 4, it talks about these Lear jets actually making some sort of either visual or radar contact with them, but they weren't able to keep up with them. That's exactly what the Lear jets said to the air traffic controllers. So, you know, the top speed of those aircraft is probably the Lear jets. You're talking probably 300 to 400 miles an hour, you know, at that altitude. So these things were doing much more of a speed than that. My estimate is probably well over 400 to 500 miles per hour. So that's the only indication of the kind of speed these things were traveling at.
Well, what then would lead you, I guess, to, I don't know, speculate that these might be, I don't know, some sort of extraterrestrial vehicle? Could they not have been, who knows, like a MiG, a Russian fighter, a Russian jet of some sort, or some sort of, you know, foreign aircraft?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's very common. A lot of times what happens is NORAD will pick up radar of any kind. And what happens is the first thing they look for, Richard, is a transponder signal. Okay, that's the first thing they look for. And these craft that were located by the radar to begin with, there was no transponder signal at all. There was no emanating signal. A transponder, for those who might not know, every aircraft that takes off has to have a transponder, which sends out a signal to tell any aircraft that's in the vicinity or any air traffic controllers on the ground where that aircraft is. And it essentially, it says, excuse me, it says, I'm here, I'm sending out a signal, here's where I am, if you need to locate me, here's my frequency, and I'm here in the airspace. These things did not have any kind of transponder at all, or the transponder that they may have had was not functioning.
Well, if you're flying into another country's airspace and you don't want to be detected, wouldn't you simply switch your transponder off?
Or they could do that.
Okay.
But the problem there, Richard, was that these two CF-18s actually got up to the altitude as to where these things were. Okay, and on page 3 of the document, the CF-18s actually said, yes, we are 90 seconds away from the target. And then as they approached the target, they actually, on page 4, said they made contact with the document, with the object.
Contact.
So they made contact with it. It says it exactly that on line, it's about 12 lines on the bottom of page the NORAD page 3 document. Actually, the number of the page is page 89, but I have numbered it page 3 in my listing. And it says on the line, first of all, it says time to target for the CF-18s is 90 seconds, and the next line reads CADSMCSYYQQ CF-18s have contact at 35,000 feet. So that in essence tells me that these CF-18s made some sort of contact. It doesn't say visual or it doesn't say radar. It says have contact. So whatever it was, Richard, be it MiGs or be it a jet airliner that may be off course, they made contact. So they, in fact, would have known if it was a Russian MiG, or they would have known that it was an airliner that's off its flight path. So in fact, it says, and this is the really big news here. It says that CF-18s have contact at 35,000 feet, and that is definite proof that these jets made contact with something.
Now, you took this information to the then defense minister here in Canada, Peter McKay.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And what was his response?
Well, the first thing I learned from Mr. McKay's response, and I've got it here in front of me, is in the interest of standardization, let me establish the North American. He starts getting into all different kinds of babblegog that is basically undecipherable. The bottom line is that he could not find this document. He went to the dates that I had. He went to other incidents that he had, I guess, his officials look for him, and one of them was an airline jet, a Japanese or rather a Chinese jet airliner that they didn't know it was off track. They guided it back onto its course. Okay, China Airlines, and there was another one that they couldn't explain, but the fact of the matter was the other one was over Baffin Island. He did not have any kind of response at all and could not find the actual document that his own department had given me. So, in fact, he really had no idea what was going on about the specific incident that I have cataloged and that the Access of Information National Defense Department sent to me. And this is the physical document. It's right there. And I don't understand for one moment why this man could not find these documents. And it really kind of is very, very confusing that the Minister of Defense here in Canada, then Minister, could not locate these particular documents. And then he goes on to say, well, Mr. Vigiani, not knowing all the circumstances around the incident that you're referring to, we would just like to explain this to you as either an aircraft that has a non-functioning or has no transponder at all, or they are, and I'm going to be quote writing now, a flock of birds.
A flock of birds at 35,000 feet.
At 35. Now, I know no ornithoid capable of flying at 35,000 feet. So what we have here is a situation, Richard, very clearly, that the Minister of Defense is he's flying blind. He has no idea what we're talking about. He has his department is unable to find these documents. He's unable to find these documents. And eventually, Richard, we're going to get to the bottom of why he made that kind of explanation based on literally no facts at all.
Well, Victor, stay on the case. We know you will. And thank mm-hmm. you for your dogged pursuit of the truth, my friend.
Yeah. Well, we're going to be sending out a whole lot of information to a number of high-level ministers in Parliament demanding answers, and that is going to be going out sometime this week, Richard.
All right, my friend. We'll see you soon.
Take care now.
Victor Vigiani. Thank you, Tim Spreen, for production next week, Angelic Encounters with Rosemary Ellen Guiley, and this secret U.S. plan to pull the plug on the Internet and cell phone communications. That's Department of Homeland Security. In the meantime, we'll see you next week. Move over, Aphrodite. I'm coming home. Good night.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.